I extol those who with loving care and compassionate concern feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and house the homeless. He who notes the sparrows fall will not be unmindful of such service.
The Mormon Channel now presents Faith in Action. Welcome to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel, a show about welfare, humanitarian aid, and service around the world. Today we welcome Gordon and Marcia Christensen, who served in Nepal as humanitarian missionaries. Welcome, Brother and Sister Christensen.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
I'm so excited about this today. There's so many questions. But first, let's talk about Brother and Sister Christensen. Are you from Utah, from California? Where are you from?
I grew up in California.
Mm-hmm.
And went to BYU and so forth. But then after we married, we went back to California. And mm-hmm. We lived in Hemet, California, and we were there for like 34 years
mm-hmm.
Before
Raised
we went
our family
on a mission.
There.
Yeah.
So you met at BYU?
No, I actually went to Utah State.
Okay.
We met after.
We met in the first singles ward that the church established in Salt Lake, Immigration Branch. In the,
yeah. Family?
Six children.
Mm-hmm.
11 grandchildren.
Okay. Was it tough to leave them to go on a mission?
No, because only one of them lived near us.
Okay.
The rest are all over the place, so it wasn't too hard.
The decision is made. Brother Christensen, you retired. What were you doing for a living before?
I was a physical therapist. I worked a lot in home care.
Oh, okay. Decision is made. You're going to go on a mission. Did you consider a proselytizing mission, or was it always a welfare mission? What was the process here? I see a smile on Sister Christensen that there's a story here.
I think. We had planned on serving a mission almost from the time we got married.
Mm-hmm.
As a young woman, I wanted to serve a mission and wasn't able to. So that was something I always wanted to do. So we just decided we would fill out the paperwork and we would say we'll go anywhere and leave it open. We'd serve up to the 23 months and just leave it open.
Okay. Paperwork goes in. You tell the bishop what's the process now of getting this done.
Yeah, we actually had a special assignment. We worked in a branch in a little town in the mountains near Hemet.
Mm-hmm.
But we went to our branch president, and he'd never done it before. It was a learning experience for him.
Mm-hmm.
But we turned it over to him, and it was all done by computers and sent to the stake president. You know, he filled it out on the computer and sent it to Salt Lake, and then we had a lengthy interview with our stake president. He just said he was surprised we didn't want to request anything. And then it was about 3 weeks later the call came.
Let's talk about that. Is it a manila envelope? Is it just a small envelope? How does the call come? What does it look like?
Big envelope.
Big
we
envelope.
Have three sons that served missions, and we know what to look for.
Okay. So did you have family on the phone or a little get-together to open the envelope? What happened there?
Well, since we only had one child nearby, mm-hmm. she and her husband came. We both had cell phones. They both had cell phones, and we had a landline. So mm-hmm. we had them all connected to all of our other children
mm-hmm.
when we opened it.
Okay. And did you think there was a misprint, perhaps? What did it say?
Well, we were called to the India-Bangalore mission.
Okay.
With a special assignment to serve in Kathmandu, Nepal as humanitarian missionaries.
All right. And Kathmandu.
And it was kind of a thing like, we better go look up. Where is this?
Well, I think it's natural. I mean, we've all heard of the Himalayas. We've all heard of Nepal and Kathmandu. But you just heard of them. You don't know exactly where they are.
Is it real?
is it real? Does it go into detail, Brother Christensen, about what you're going to be doing? Does it give you kind of an idea what the call will be?
Well, all it told us was it's a humanitarian and non-proselyting mm-hmm. mission. And so that's really the only information it gave us. At this time, you know, we mm-hmm. learned most of what we learned was in the MTC about humanitarian missions.
Okay, so you pack up and go, come to Salt Lake City, go to Provo, and go mm-hmm. to the MTC. How long is that? How long are you there?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And is it specifically for Nepal, or are there a lot of other missionaries that are grouped together? So it's kind of a general teaching that you get.
The first week's general. Mm-hmm. You know, let's have all the mission where we go through, preach my gospel, and so forth. The second week was all humanitarian training, and there was, what, four of the couples? There's five humanitarian couples that was in our group. Mm-hmm. And usually it's the first week of the month that the humanitarian missionaries come in. And so we received our training from people who had, you know, been humanitarian missionaries. And there's a lot to learn because there's concepts that I just had no idea. You know.
Now, is it humanitarian missionaries that had served in Nepal or just general humanitarian missionaries?
General.
So you really still don't know anything about Nepal or what you're going to be doing or where you're going or anything else at this point.
The only thing we knew about Nepal was we were emailing the couple that we were replacing.
Okay.
But no amount of preparation can get you ready for that.
Okay. We'll get there in a minute. Well,
yeah. She told us things about it, but until you're there, you don't really understand.
All right. So you jump on an airplane at Salt Lake City.
Well, after a visa wait.
Oh, okay. So is that a long time?
Well, we went into the MTC in November. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they were dividing the mission. So we technically were in the India-New Delhi mission. That changed while we were in the MTC. Mm-hmm. And the church was trying to get our visas. We had a visa to Nepal, but we didn't have one to India. So we got to wait about 5 weeks for that visa. Before we went.
What are you doing then daily for 5 weeks? Are you in the MTC or are you...
We stayed with our son who lives in Orem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. Went to the temple a lot.
Mm-hmm. But you're free to do whatever you want during those 5 weeks. It's just...
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to the airplane. Where do you fly out of Salt Lake into and then into and then into? How many jumps do you have to get to Nepal?
We flew to Phoenix and then from Phoenix to London.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like a 9-hour layover in London.
Mm-hmm.
And then from London, we flew to New Delhi.
Okay.
Where the mission president picked us up. It was just a new mission. The mission was only maybe a month or two.
Okay.
And we spent Christmas Day in the mission home with the young missionaries. It was really quite enjoyable with all the young missionaries. Some who were American, the others were native Indians, Indians.
Yeah.
And that was really quite enjoyable to spend that week there. Then the next day, we were put on a plane from New Delhi to Kathmandu, Nepal.
Okay. A small plane, a regular size jet or a...
Kind of medium size.
Medium size, okay.
Medium size plane. But we had to go through all kinds of security. We almost didn't make the plane, but...
Plus the fact they were remodeling the airport in New Delhi.
Right. But I just remember one thing I remember on the plane. They offered us a meal, and I ordered chicken and bit into it, and it was delicious. And then the spice came. And then, you know, that was just something we learned quickly, that the food in that area of the world is very spicy.
Mm-hmm. What's your first impressions? Did you land in Kathmandu in the daytime or in the nighttime?
Daytime.
So you can look out the window and see... Here we are. What are first impressions of Kathmandu?
Oh, wow. Very different. Very, very different.
Well, from the air, it looked very, very,
very
nice.
Very green.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Very green.
At that time of year. And I'd say, one thing, you know, it's not a real modern airport. You know, it's small and you go in there. And I mean, at the time, our thoughts were like, that couple from Beaver, Utah better be here because we, you know, the other couple is a Kathmandu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they were, of course, you know, and they picked us up. But the street's very crowded. There's cows walking all over the street and, you know, and very narrow streets, lots of traffic, you know.
So this is the latter part of December.
Mm-hmm.
By now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it very cold or is it,
yes.
What's the climate like at this time?
Well, actually, it was very much like Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference was in California, when it got into the 50s or 40s, you know, you went to a heated building. In Kathmandu, the buildings are – there's very few buildings that are heated. So whatever it was outside, that's what it was inside. So we got very cold at night. We had a space heater that we had to learn how to get in a small room.
Propane heater.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, propane space heater that – We learned to go into our small office and then have it on during the winter. It's about 2-3 months where it's cold, and then after it was time to go to bed, we'd go climb under, you know, about 8 covers, be warm. So
Missionaries you're replacing are there to pick you up.
No, they had already gone home already because gone. We had so to wait for our visa.
The couple from Beaver, Utah. That you're
he
talking
was
about
the this. Country director.
Okay.
And they got there in October,
right,
I believe.
End of October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're there to pick you up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is he driving?
Ooh, oh, no.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we – no, our transportation was taxis.
Okay. So not a driver, a church driver, or did you have people did translation for you? How did you do they speak English in
Kathmandu?
They do.
They do. Most of them speak English.
It's taught in the schools, and the members of the branch are might say over 30, where they didn't emphasize English so much, had troubles with English, but mm-hmm. Most of the people spoke a little bit of English. In fact, it actually is a requirement for people to be baptized to have some knowledge of English, which surprised me when I first came there.
Now, are there missionaries in Kathmandu?
No young proselyting missionaries. Okay. There's just 2 senior couples who are on non-proselyting humanitarian missions. Mm-hmm.
So you don't in any way try to teach the gospel, or are there limitations to what you can do?
Definitely. When we first got there, we were asked to teach some post-baptismal discussions. And then because of the situation with non-proselyting, our mission president said, no, don't do that even.
Because you're humanitarian missionaries.
Yeah, because we could serve in the branch. We could have callings and help out in the branch. Well, but otherwise, they didn't want us doing that.
We did teach the post-baptismal lesson because they're already members. We weren't we weren't proselyting then.
But after a while,
he told us not to go out and do any form of – don't teach the lessons. The lessons were usually taught by – we had a branch missionary leader who was a return missionary, a Nepali native. But he taught just during hours we met at church, in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we went out to we weren't encouraged to go with the branch mission leader to teach a family the gospel.
What is the branch like? What size? How big?
About 130.
Active, participating weekly, or?
Well, it meets on, first of all, we meet on Saturdays.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
We got that. But there were, you know, the attendance would usually around, it'd be in the 80s. But then when we had 3 American couples who had large families, they combined about 21 children. Mm-hmm. When they left, then it was in the 60s, usually, mm-hmm. at sacrament meeting.
So the branch members are a mix of Americans that are there on assignment, or people that have moved in, or are actually some that have been baptized there?
Most are actually Nepalese.
Oh, okay.
We did while we were there, we did have 2 families that the husband worked at the embassy, the U.S. embassy.
But then when they left before,
left before we did.
We did, and so that decreased, you know.
An activity in the church is difficult. Getting to church is difficult.
How so? They have to take a bus? Do they walk? How
they
do they
take
get
public transportation. They walk. If there's a transportation strike, which we had a number of those, attendance would fall because they came from all over Kathmandu to attend church. And those who lived nearby could walk, and that wasn't a problem. But if they relied on public transportation, sometimes that was difficult.
It would take half hour, 45 minutes, to get to, even an hour, to get to church because Kathmandu is very spread out. And, you know, they'd have to take the public transportation and stopping every, you know, mile to pick people up and mm-hmm. so forth. So it was one day a transportation strike was called on Saturday when you met at church. And so there were about 30 people at church that day. You know, those are the ones that could walk.
What is the city like? Are there prosperous sections and poor sections, or is it all just kind of the same? What does Kathmandu like?
Well, first of all, the roads, I mean, I imagine were paths for wagons and horses, so they're all very, very narrow. You know, we had a joke that Brigham Young did not design Kathmandu, but there are some sections that were more prosperous than others, but by our standards, mm-hmm. you know, we would say that that, you know, they did not have a real high standard of living there.
Tell us about your neighborhood where you lived. Little shops close by?
There's little shops everywhere. Mm-hmm. You could go down our street and hit a vegetable store, and then a few steps later hit another one and another one. It didn't seem to be competitive at all. It's just convenient. We had a hospital across the street, right, across the main street.
Where the ATM was.
Shops all around, yeah.
And, you know, the house we lived in was actually pretty nice. I mean, it was like 3 stories, 4,000 square feet, and there's a yard. But like I say, no central air or heating. You know, so, I mean, we just opened the windows.
It was a big cement house is what
it was.
Cold outside, it was cold inside.
So you mentioned central air. So it gets quite warm in the summer then?
Oh, yes. Very humid. And
very humid
hot.
And very hot.
Well, about 9 to 10 months of the year, you didn't need to wear a coat or anything, except if it was raining, you know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was really interesting. What I didn't realize is that in the winter, it never rains in Kathmandu. But in the summer, it rains every day. You know, it's just the opposite of here, the monsoon mm-hmm. season.
Right.
You know, they call it the rainy season, you know, June, July, and August. You know, so it's they depend heavily on that monsoon season.
Interesting. What about, did you feel safe in the country? Were there areas that you were told not to go? Or?
At different times, yes. If there was a strike of some sort, we were told to avoid certain areas. We had a friend that we worked with, he was kind of a partner organization for us. And if there ever was a problem, he would call and say, don't go here, don't go there, or it's okay, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, I remember walking down the street and there'd be a group gathered, you know, some type of demonstration. You know, we're instructed just not get involved, you know, go around them. But I never really felt threatened in any way.
No.
You know, I mean, it's usually any violence was Nepali on Nepali. You know, they let the expatriates that lived there were pretty much left alone. There's no anti-American.
No, definitely not. In fact, the people were extremely friendly and helpful.
Let's get to the humanitarian part then. So we've landed, kind of acclimated, had some nice spicy food and cold, and and now you're settling in to do some work. What are the first things how do you decide what you're going to do? Are there projects already established for you?
Oh, there were projects ongoing.
Yeah, about the first week we were there, the area welfare supervisor came to tour Kathmandu to see our projects. So we were taken out on these mountain roads, which is a whole other story. But their highways are just one lane each way, so it was kind of hazardous. But went way out to these villages and saw the water projects that the church was doing that our predecessors had set up, and it was very interesting. You know, extending water from one village to another. You know, people instead of having to walk for a couple of hours, and it was always the women that did this, the carrying water back to the village, that now the water could just come right into their village. It would save they'd have much more time for their families or whatever they chose to do, rather than spending half their day fetching water.
Are these projects that you were involved in, are they already done? Were you doing new water projects while you were there?
We actually did. Latter-day Saint Charities was recognized shortly after we arrived. And for about the next 6 months, they were working on writing a project agreement, which included what projects we were going to do and how much money was going to be spent. We had other projects outside of the agreement, but the agreement itself specified certain things that we had to do mm-hmm. with the government. We had water projects that were ongoing. We started some new ones while we were there. We closed some. We did, along with any water project, we try and do hygiene kits, mm-hmm. school kits.
Which was always nice because usually it'd be on Sunday. That was the day. Some people had the day off, but we'd ask members of the church to come to where we met for church, and we'd put together hygiene kits. And
the school kits.
And the school kits.
And the thing that's different about there is they couldn't ship anything in to Nepal. So when we did hygiene and school kits, we had to buy the supplies there in Nepal and assemble them there.
one of our branch members kind of invented a backpack where in one part of the backpack we'd put the school kit and the other part we'd put the hygiene kit.
And they were able to print the logo
And print the LDSC logo on it, and we would take it to wherever the project. It's usually up in the mountains, mm-hmm. you know, so, somewhere, to a small village. And
let me be more specific. When you say water projects, are you drilling? Are you boring? Are you water storage? What exactly is a water project?
Well, in Nepal, they have a lot of clean water up in the mountains, and we find a source for clean water. And then the villagers will often do a lot of the work themselves, laying pipe, bringing the water down. Storage tanks were important, and tap stands were important.
You know, because of the Himalayas in the country, Nepal has more fresh water sources than any country in the world, except for Brazil, I think it is. But it's never been truly developed because of all the political unrest. And so many villages are just without fresh water. And they also don't have a system to get that fresh water into Kathmandu. The water we drink in Kathmandu is, I had the experience of drinking it and was, you know, not feeling well for 3 days. But we always drink bottled water. But up in the villages, you know, when they have these projects, the water is clean. You don't have to sanitize it or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very clean.
Very clean.
When you talk about up in the villages, what does a typical village look like? What type of housing do they have? What kind of infrastructure is there in the village?
Well, a lot of them are built of some type of clay. You know, it's really mud and clay they put together, and then it's kind of a thatched roof. And you know, just there's a... you know, that might be two rooms that they live in. And, you know, extremely humble. And their sanitary facilities, that wouldn't be in the house. It'd probably.
No. And they often have dirt floors.
Yeah, dirt floors. And they'd probably, they probably just go out of the village to take care of sanitary needs. But that was part of the water projects, too, is building, you know, at schools, especially, you know, toilets.
Mm-hmm. In a village such as this, is there a village leader? Or is there a village square or some place where the villagers might meet for meetings? Or
they have what they call a village development committee. And that kind of – I don't know how to say it.
Well, they kind of
meet
lead,
together, right. And they plan for ways that they can improve things. They try to get organizations to help them. Like Latter-day Saint Charities. They have a lot of committees that meet together to just try and improve their situation in their own particular village.
And it's really emphasized when there is a water project in a village that I did not understand this concept before my mission, but sustainability, that the village will take care of the water project after we go, you know, so that they continue to have water.
Yeah, that's one thing about Latter-day Saint Charities that was really emphasized. We had one project in the southern area of Nepal in an area called Chitwan. And part of the project was running water actually to homes if the people chose to pay to have it taken to their home. They had a monthly fee, and all this money went into a bank account, and one person was kind of supervising that so that if there was a problem and something broke down, they had money to take care of it, to repair it and keep it in good order.
Where would this money have come from? What did they do to earn money? Agriculture? Was there
mostly
cattle? Or I mean, what?
Mostly agriculture.
Mm-hmm. They have little farms or just a little plot out by the house?
Yes, to both.
and when we went on our trips out to villages, you'd see, because it was a mountainous area, you'd see these mountains just terraced. They really pretty, and lots of labor put into it.
They grew wherever they could.
What would be the primary thing that they're growing with the product?
Rice.
Rice?
Rice.
Rice.
Rice is the main product,
and then potatoes another time of year.
Depending on where you lived. Yeah. You know, in the southern part, rice grows well in the northern mountainous areas, then they will grow potatoes, millet, barley, those kinds of things.
You talk about the north and south. Were you able to drive to both? Were you able to see both?
Actually,
sides?
We got to see quite a bit of Nepal. One of the gentlemen that we worked with, who also happened to do the distribution for our wheelchairs, took us to a number of wheelchair distributions, and he tried to get us in various parts of the country.
Yeah, we were up real close to the Himalayas, near Tibet, he said, one time. And then south, we were right on the border of India and Nepal.
We went east on an emergency relief. You can't go very far west in Nepal.
Mm-hmm.
The far west is just very undeveloped.
Extremely remote. It's still the 1300s or 1400s there, from what we were told. You know, you could fly a plane into a landing strip, and then you walk 3 days to get to a village or
wow.
Like that. Yeah.
What type of vehicles did you travel in? Were they like 4x4s or what?
A lot, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one place we went to where we were distributing school and hygiene kits, we had these, they weren't Jeeps, but they were like Jeeps, like a mm-hmm. four-wheel drive. And we got up there. We had two vehicles. We got up there and parked, and all of a sudden the villagers were coming with all these flowers, putting petals and things all around the vehicles. And we thought, what is going on? And we found out that those were the first two motor vehicles that had ever been in that village.
Wow.
So they were celebrating.
We didn't realize the road we were on. It was a narrow road, right?
A narrow dirt road.
Cut on the side of a hill. And we didn't realize we were the first vehicles that ever traveled on that road. So that was,
and obviously the first Americans they'd ever met then, probably.
Probably,
yeah. We had a sister with us who was volunteering from America who wanted to go with us on the project. And we were going up this road, and she couldn't believe we were going on this trip because the mountains were there and just narrow road.
A white knuckle ride.
And we'd done it so many times, we didn't even think about it. She was just very, but anyway, yeah, we were surprised. They just dug the road and we were the first ones on it.
So humanitarian, we've talked about water. What other projects? You mentioned wheelchairs. Is there a great need in Nepal for
definitely.
Wheelchairs?
Oh, definitely. Because medical care is iffy, especially outside of Kathmandu, a number of people have problems that normally would be taken care of in a place like the United States,
mm-hmm.
Where we were allotted 750 wheelchairs a year. And like I said, we worked with this gentleman who helped distribute them. We went with him a number of times, but he would go on very small distributions at least twice a month. We found people with club feet, limbs that were very distorted, things that probably maybe happen here but could be correctable.
Yeah.
And they just grow up with those problems.
Watching somebody walk into the wheel, one fellow had go-ahead or sandals on his hands, and he was just walking on his hands, and his feet were – he couldn't straighten out his legs. He had his knees bent and just walking on his hands, and he was one of the wheelchair recipients. So.
Who determines who gets them?
Our friend did, the one that we worked
with.
And
he was an NGO or
– Yes, he was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He had people contacting him constantly. He has done this for LDSC for a number of years. And so different areas of the country would contact him about wheelchairs. And he has a form that they have to fill out. He wants pictures. He wants ID. He wants to know what the problem is, how badly they need the wheelchair. It's very organized.
And he keeps excellent records. So for the last 7 years, we have every wheelchair recipient, a picture and application.
Yeah.
So, he made the program go. So
yeah, he did.
The church provided the financing, and he really made it work throughout.
Would he then be a government employee?
No.
No.
No. He used to be, but
mm-hmm.
He has his own NGO. He runs a cyber center for the disabled and the blind, which we also worked with him on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So this is something he's kind of donating his time, or he's...
Yeah, he used to work in the government, and at one point he just wasn't satisfied, and he saw so many needs in Kathmandu, especially. that he told me once, he just decided that he needed to do something to help.
How about neonatal? Were you involved in that at all?
No, we were not.
That's not it. And there's not vision care either at this time.
Okay. And
there are a number of organizations that come to Nepal to help with a lot of different areas.
Mm-hmm. What besides water then, do you think was the greatest need there today?
Well, I was like, going back to the wheelchairs, mm-hmm. It was really interesting to see, a mother carrying her teenage son on her back to get into the wheelchair ceremony, to pick up the wheelchair, and just so that was a great need.
Well, we in this Chitwan area in southern Nepal, we had gone on a wheelchair distribution, and then we went. We went out. He was out showing us some areas. There was a big river and everything. On our way back, we were stopped because there was a gentleman out in the yard in his wheelchair who had just received it the day before and was so excited that he could get out of the house and he could do things because now he didn't have to be carried.
He was mobile. No.
Yeah.
So, but then some we were the only blind cyber center in Nepal. The church financed it, and our friends set it up. And we taught people who were sight impaired and began a JAWS program. JAWS is where the blind can use a computer. You push a K button, and the computer will say K, R.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they learn. So it enables the blind people to be computer literate.
And we had computer classes for both the sight impaired and the disabled. It was wheelchair accessible. So.
Are these classes within church-owned property or where?
It was in the center that he set up. He got the building.
This man sounds like just an angel.
He is. He's amazing. And he's a wonderful man on top of it, But he got the center started and the church helped with some of the equipment. He has teaching disabled. We started a sewing class there for women, disabled women.
They were disabled and some had been abandoned by their husband. They had no had no means of support. One was selling cucumbers on the street and just trying to eke out a living. But, by learning to sew. And then we were setting up sewing centers where they could make clothes and so forth and sell them, and earn a living.
Yeah, these little shops. We would see them everywhere. And so there was a need for them. And it was a way for these women to make some money.
Let me ask you about a moment that as you look back, you've been back since October, is that
yes.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
As you look back, a defining moment or a touching moment, something that just that really sticks out in your mind, what would that be? I know there's always so many things, but something that really meant a lot to you.
Well, I might get a little teary on this one.
Me too, probably. So.
We had been asked to teach Institute, which we had done prior to church services. And then we were asked to divide that into Institute and Seminary. We had a meeting for seminary-age students. We started with about 9 eligible students. And over time, that tapered off. It was difficult to get to church an hour early. It's difficult to get to church. And we had, I was the one teaching seminary and Gordon taught Institute, but I had 2 kids, a boy and a girl, who committed to each other that they wanted to get credit for seminary. And they really worked with each other, encouraging to get to seminary. And just a side note, they both actually did get credit. They did 80%. They attended 80% of the time, and they did 100% of the homework I gave them, which is incredible. They just don't have time. They go to school 6 days a week there. But one particular day, we were having traffic issues. There was no traffic running. And I just figured, oh, darn, they're not going to make it. And the girl, her father was in the branch and very active, and he had a motorcycle, so he could get her to church if need be. But the young man was the only member in his family. And I just figured I wouldn't be teaching that morning. He wasn't going to show up. And he came right on time. And I said, "How did you get here?" And he said, "Well, I almost didn't come, but I decided I had made this commitment." And so he walked an hour and a half to get to seminary on time. And it just impressed me so much.
Just the strength of these of the youth. That's just amazing.
That's largely who's joining the church in Nepal is young people.
And the thing about this particular fellow, his parents were just totally opposed to the church. It was kind of like he told me, his dad said, "I didn't mind you becoming Christian." They're Hindus. "But I didn't expect you to spend 5 hours a day on the Sabbath. You could be studying instead of going to church." You know, so he had to withstand a lot of family pressure.
He overcame a lot of obstacles. Right.
So education is very important then to these
people.
Yes,
very important.
Yeah, extremely. It is now. You know, that's probably the biggest industry in Kathmandu is education. There's all kinds of schools there.
And they are free?
No.
Oh, no. No, they're not free, and they have to buy uniforms, too, to go to school.
But the public's, well, what we call...
What we call public, yeah.
The government schools were, I think they just had to buy the uniform. But they really emphasize English more. In fact, at one school, I remember when the boys got in trouble because he spoke Nepali on campus.
Yeah, the same one.
He just said they had to speak everything in English. Or they were subject to some type of discipline.
Which is another project that we did. We taught English in a school where students were brought from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And their chances of getting a decent job would be much better if they knew English.
As you're teaching English, if one of the students were to ask about the church, would you have been allowed to say anything about it? Or is it just completely forbidden? How does that work?
It's not forbidden. In fact, we had one girl in our last class. Somehow she knew. We didn't really actively talk about the church, but she knew we were Christian. And she let us know that she was Christian, too.
And she brought some type of manual.
She brought some literature and some things, too. So
interesting.
But by and large, they were Hindu.
But it was Hindu. But pretty much The kids that came in there were very accepting, you know, of Christians and so forth, even though they weren't themselves. And by teaching English, and we gave them LDS Charity.
The books and the notebooks.
The books
that
they had the
with.
Logo on them. So our hope is that when the church is recognized and somewhere the gospel is preached in Nepal, that they will remember Latter-day Saint Charities and be, you know, that the ground will have been plowed a little bit, and that they'll be receptive to the gospel.
Brother Christensen, a remark from you, one thing you were thinking about, one thing you remember.
One thing that really hit me strong is that right one of our last Saturdays in Nepal, the baptismal services were held on Saturday. And when we first came there, there was this couple that was always at church. You know, I just assumed they were members, and then I found out that they are not members and that they attended every week. Well, finally, they resolved their family problems. So it had been about, you know, 20 months that since we'd been there. And they were baptized the last Saturday we were there. But our district leader, our country director, did the interview. And he found out that this man had actually been saving money, or he'd pay tithing every month. But he put it away, and when he joined the church, then he turned in the tithing, which is, you know, amazing to.
So, as an investigator, he's paying tithing,
right,
and holding on to it.
Yes, he held on to it, and then when he became a member, then he paid it. Mm-hmm. So that was I don't know, that was really heartrending to me when Elder Borland told the country director told us about that. We thought, wow, that's
and the strength is incredible.
It is.
Anything that I've missed that you'd like to talk about? Have we missed it?
I think we ought to say, do you want to tell the story of...
Well, yeah, this is just a story of one of the disabled computer classes, sight impaired. We had a young woman who took the class and was able to get a job. Normally, disabled people are essentially shunned in Nepal. Their families are embarrassed by them. they're a burden to their families. And this young lady took this computer class and was able to get a job as a receptionist. We didn't actually ever get to go see her, but our friend went to see her, and she had a desk and a computer. And he said, you should have seen her. It was like she had won the lottery, you know. She was just thrilled that she had this skill. She could earn money. She wouldn't be a burden to her family. She could pay her own way. And I'm sure the pay wasn't that great, but it was more than she'd ever seen. And she was proud. She was showing him her desk and the whole thing. She was just so proud of herself that she was able to do that.
Is it tough for members of the church to relate their families? Those who have joined, is it very difficult for them?
Yes.
Yeah, I was assigned a young man, been a convert. Well, he was baptized after we'd been there about 18 months. He was supposed to be baptized before, but the family just gave him all the pressure. He finally did arrange things so he could get baptized with his family. But I was supposed to be his home teacher, and I was making arrangements. I'll come over to your house. And he says, no, I better come over to your house. You know, so, you know, I'll meet you at your house just because the family pressure. You know, there are some. We had a...
Yeah. There is one thing that we haven't mentioned that I think is important to bring up. While we were there, we were able to teach a missionary preparation class. This little branch in Nepal that has about 130 members currently has 5 missionaries serving.
Wow.
That we were able to help prepare. One is in Australia, one in Fiji, 2 in India. The 2 young men, they usually go to India. And then we have one on Temple Square.
Well, one thing I noticed that I thought it was very difficult to have anything other than on the Sabbath, which was Saturday. During the week, they have to rely on public transportation. And that closes at 7 o'clock. It's over. And we talked about having a young adult activity on Wednesday night. And says, well, you'll have to be done before, you know, like 6 o'clock so we can catch a bus home and so forth. So pretty much one of the mission president called it. He worked in Pakistan, but he called it. It was the same way in Pakistan. But he says, we call them Sabbath friends. You know, we meet on Sunday. It's just very hard to have any type of activity any other day than Saturday. Saturday was the official day off in Nepal.
Was public transportation affordable, or was that a struggle as well for them too?
Well, if you rode the bus, it's affordable. Mm-hmm. If you try and do anything else.
And we rode a public bus a couple of times. Very, very crowded.
As little as possible.
Yeah, in fact, the embassy encouraged us not to ride public transport.
Other than taxis.
Just take taxis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the interesting thing is when we found out where we were going, you know, the mouths dropped, obviously. We just didn't expect that. We were hoping to go foreign, but that was really foreign. We had a lot of interesting experiences. We had a lot of heartrending experiences. Saw a lot of things that we just really didn't know. We knew existed, but we really didn't see. So you don't really think about it. And I've had people ask, was it a hard mission? Yes, it was. Because we're from a first world, a developed country. But would I do it again? Knowing what I know, yes. It was so worth it. I learned so much about myself and what I was capable of doing that, yeah, I would do it again.
Thank you very much for coming by. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel. Today, we've been visiting with Gordon and Marcia Christensen, who served in Nepal as humanitarian missionaries. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.